This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com. Just stop your crying, it's a sign of the times. We gotta get away from here. We gotta get away from here. Just stop your crying, it'll be alright. They told me that the end is near. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Kate Prusser. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. And normally, at this point, I would be introducing John Troopin, who is my co-editor slash chief errand boy slash associate editor. But John is moving across the country right now. He is somewhere in the middle of the country, we think. I don't know. He just passed Dan Altavilla's Mercyhurst college and waved goodbye as he was passing. We'll cover that among other things, but luckily I have two other great analysts on with me today. First up is our miners expert, Joe Doyle. Joe, how are you?
I am good. How's everyone doing today?
We were just talking before we started about how we are tired, right?
Yeah, my eyes are bleeding, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yeah, it feels like the draft, kind of, you know, where it's just like, and you're slammed with that adrenaline, and then kind of everything, like there's a hard deadline and it's over, and then you just spend the rest of the time picking up the pieces, and that's what we're going to be doing today. Also joining us is our pitching analysis slash, I would say, chief analytics writer, Mikey Mikey, how do I say your last name? Is it a Jato or a Ayato?
I always tell people there's a couple of ways that you can say it. Either a Jeto or a Hedo. If you're in the Philippines, it's a Hedo. If you're here, which we are, it's a Jeto because we anglicized on the way over. So I accept either.
Okay. Well, that's great to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
So Joe and Mikey are here to talk us through along, and then John did not want to be left out, so he sent us a typed statement to be read, sort of world dictator style. We, his emissaries, are to read out his thoughts on the trade. But before I do that, let's go round table and just talk like gut reactions. Obviously, what we're referring to is the Mariners. Were not pat at the deadline, as you would not expect them to have been, but they only had one trading partner, and that was the San Diego Padres. So they pulled off kind of a massive deal for Austin Nola, who was at the time the second-best catcher in baseball. Is that correct? Second-best?
Yeah, that sounds... He was third-best.
Top five.
He's third-best since last year and this year put together, so...
Mm. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So pulled off a deal for Austin Nola, sending kind of a crop of prospects slash MLB adjacent slash have some MLB time players. And then also sent away a couple relievers in that deal. And Dan Altavilla, as we mentioned, RIP, second longest tenured Mariner behind Kyle Seager. And Austin Adams, a personal favorite of mine. And then also we got word today that Taylor Williams has also been dealt for another piece. So, woo! Big haps, big happenings. We knew Jerry wouldn't be left out. What is your gut reaction to this trade, Joe?
I really like both of the deals. With the first deal, with the mega deal, if you will, I think it's probably not... Like, I don't want to take any wind out of the sails because it's a really exciting deal, but I don't think it's necessarily the blockbuster that some people think it is with Taylor Trammell coming back over. I think he is a really, really nice piece with a really good ceiling and, you know, definitely has the ceiling of a big league regular. But I actually tend to agree with some of the other opinions that I've seen kind of floating around the interwebs. And that is that Andreas Munoz is probably the centerpiece for this trade to really work in Seattle's favor, like at the end of the day. Because if he's a legit eighth or ninth inning guy and you can kind of pair him with Johan Ramirez, we've seen how valuable relievers have become in this game today. So I'm really thrilled getting Munoz. I think he's going to be really fun. And then I can't go a minute without talking about my boy, Ty France. It's very clear.
Your boy, Ty France. You have been beating that drum forever. I was so happy for you.
Twitter.com/JoeDoyleMILB has been bookmarked on Sir Jerry DePoto's web browser for quite some time. And I spoke it into existence, and Ty France is a Seattle Mariner. You're welcome,
yeah,
Ty.
You secreted that. You pulled the secret on that. You just said it enough times that it became true.
My next course of action is Gerrit Cole.
I would like to say I am disappointed that I've not been able to speak Robert Hassel into existence as a Mariner yet, but... it seems that they are considering him part of their next wave, their future. So I'll just have to continue to be a fan from afar. Mikey, how about you? What was your gut reaction to the trade?
So I didn't really expect to receive anything back of, I guess, like substance for Nola. And of course, I didn't think it would be such a big deal.
And why was that, Mikey? Why weren't you expecting a lot out of Nola?
I just thought that we wouldn't get Tremel, like a prospect that at least on prospect lists ranks so highly. And kind of like Joe said, I think I agree that Munoz is probably kind of the headliner. He's not the sexiest in terms of name value. But it was just a little surprising to me to see, in one way, the Padres pony up and send over so many interesting names. But, you know, you could also say that even with the Clevinger deal, even with the Taylor Williams deal combined, all three of them, they didn't have to touch Patino or Gore or, you know, any of their more heralded
Camposano, who I was really hoping for, but
so
they really dealt more in like breadth and depth and not those key pieces.
It speaks volumes to the depth of their farm system, though. I mean, to deal what, three of your top 10 or 11 and then a bunch of guys from the, you know, top 20 on, I mean, they had to have moved like 11 to 14 prospects here at the deadline to just bolster their big league club. And to think, I mean, they're probably still one of the second or third best farm systems in the league. I mean, they're stacked. So it's a good problem to have. And I will say one thing that I thought of when this trade went through was thinking back to 2016 when AJ Preller went out and he just like overspent on, I want to say Craig Kimbrell was involved, and I think Matt Kemp was involved at that point, and he like poured all of these resources into this win now mentality, and as it was happening you could just watch, like, you could just see how poorly that was going to go. And they flipped like all of those pieces that they splurged on within a year or a year and a half. The way he did it this time was he had clearly learned his lesson. He pulled from depth. He went for pieces that complemented other players. And, you know, major props to AJ Preller for, you know, striking while the iron's hot. Because I think the Padres are one of the three or four best teams in the league now.
Well, and luckily, in kind of a weird way, like in Will Myers and Eric Hosmer turning it around, like you've almost traded for, you know, two more players to kind of round it out. And of course they expected, you know, when they signed Myers to that deal, when they signed Hosmer to that deal, they expected them to at least be good for a couple of years. So yeah, they've done so much to their team, obviously at the trade deadline, but also, you know, since the offseason. Yeah.
Obviously it helps too when you have, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. just kind of coming out of nowhere and becoming, you know, an MVP caliber player. So
that too.
I wouldn't say he came out of nowhere, but have you been a little surprised? But I've been. I mean, I always knew he was good, but I didn't know he was this good.
I didn't know his defense was this good. That's what I've been so stunned about this season. I mean, he's a legit shortstop. You couldn't really say that last year. I mean, he did a lot of crazy athletic things, but he was a bit of a liability in terms of the, you know, the routine plays, and he's really cleaned up his ability to play the position this year.
It's very similar to what J.P. Crawford did as far as, like, having that range and that athleticism and really being able to corral it into something very playable this year. Because it was defense that kept Tatis in the minors as long as well. The bat was ready. The defense was a question. So, you know, any rebuild has to have a little bit of luck, a little bit of hitting big on a player that you might not have expected otherwise. So hopefully the Mariners got that in Kyle Lewis, who obviously has been really, really fun to watch this year. I would have said even just a week ago that it's silly to look at the Padres and expect the Mariners to follow the same kind of path. I still think there are huge differences in how they are constructed. The Padres are not afraid of international signings, and they have a lot of Latin guys that the Mariners just do not. They continue to chase those safe, high floor college white guys.
I'm gonna mute my mic.
It's just a real thing. But the paths and the learnings have been encouraging to watch. And like you said, the Padres traded for a lot of stuff that isn't just for a short-term run. It's not rentals. It's guys who they can have. If it doesn't happen for them in this weird little year, those pieces will still be around next year. Taylor Williams has a ton of control. Austin Nola has a lot of control. With him, it's more like, how long is he going to be useful now that he's already 30? So, but there's still years of production ahead of them. So maybe we should read John's prepared statement.
This is the funniest shit ever.
All right, here's what John said. I've been clamoring, he says. I've been clamoring for this team to target position player prospects with upside for the entirety of this rebuild. It sucks to see Nola go, but the fact that this org was able to turn a minor league free agent, a near no-cost injured reliever, and another reliever who has been inconsistent and is out of options into four players, including multiple position player prospects, including one squarely in the high upside category, is magnificent. Whether the prospects pan out or not, the M's acquired them out of trade pieces they whipped out of the ether, spun out of hay. This is their Rumpelstiltskin moment, except hopefully Jerry doesn't eat anyone at the end of the year, or however that fable ends. I haven't read it in a while. John, as you can tell, is in the car and kind of bored, I think.
John has nothing to do except read The Nightmare Before Christmas over and over and over and over.
John is the only book
that he brought.
Definitely has a little spark of the lyrical in him, which I enjoy. I enjoy that very much. Yes, I was really hoping that they were going to see some bats come back. I know that San Diego had a ton of really high upside, cool arms in their system, but I wanted a bat back from Nola. I thought it was going to be one. I did not realize we were going to, you know, go nuclear with the seven player trade. So, and then eight, I guess, if you count Taylor. I know it's a separate transaction, but.
And Kate, this is like, this kind of, in a way, it almost makes up for the draft, like the woes that we had for the draft. Taylor Trammell is. He's athletic and he can play up the middle, and he has a bat that could turn into a nice piece. But like at the end of the day, you find playing time and you find development opportunities for someone like Taylor Trammell. And although Ty France isn't like the most athletic guy in the world, he can play multiple positions and he's
and
got a good bat.
Corners.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm really excited to see how these guys pan out, because it almost makes up for some of the athleticism that was lacking in the draft class.
I agree. There's definitely some high upside, and Trammell is still a high upside player, even though, you know, there are questions about whether he's going to reach that power speed ceiling. But he's exciting, and this is I don't think it totally makes up for it for me. I still want to see them roll the dice on some very high upside raw, like, Latin players, because I just feel like that's a huge segment that they are not taking into consideration in the rebuild. But there's stuff here that is exciting, and I think Tramiel in particular is exciting, and I think that they think they can do something with him. So that part is really fun. I know that we got a ton of questions. Thank you for sending in your questions. The one thing that this does
before we jump into that, I just want to point out one thing that I don't think is getting enough chatter in, like, the Twitter sphere and in the Mariners community, and especially in the Padres community. Austin Nola is great, and he is an expensive piece. But I think everyone is really taking for granted the trade value that Austin Adams has, because he's about to be activated. He should be back here in the next week or two for the stretch run for the Padres. And I said this in maybe January or February, whenever we wrote the 40 and 40s. I think Austin Adams, when he's healthy and at his best, is one of the top 15 to 18 relievers in baseball. And the stuff that he has is unmatched by almost everybody in the league. So if there does happen to be any Padres listeners on this podcast, or, you know, Mariners that are just kind of reminiscing on what Austin Adams was, I think it's really important to make the point that he is a very, very real high upside reliever that the Padres are gonna love.
I think that's a great point. He was always one of my favorites, and just because he hasn't been on the scene because he's been hurt. And again, important, not an arm injury, a leg injury.
Yeah.
So you have to feel good about him coming back. I am going to be the biggest Padres fan over the next few weeks, and probably beyond, even, because they have a lot of players I really like. But as far as them being the Mariners South, for sure. All right, now let's turn to talking about the one thing that I think, when we're talking about player acquisition, people are kind of like, why are they getting all these outfielders when they already have a bunch of outfielders? We're also kind of suspecting that the trade return from the Taiwan Walker trade might be an outfielder as well. This will publish tomorrow, but there's an article on the site looking at the different players that could be from the Blue Jays. We are kind of settling on the idea that Will Robertson makes a lot of sense. He's an outfielder who is a 2019 draftee. Is that right? 2019 or 2018?
I think Robertson was a 2019, like, sixth round pick.
Sixth rounder, I think that's right. Or maybe fourth rounder. I think he might actually have been a fourth rounder. I think the guy that we got from in the Taylor Williams trade might have been a sixth rounder. Anyway, so it looks like he, big Cape performer, fits the Mariners kind of player development mold. So yet another outfielder. Joe, you were pointing out before we hit record that, like, Zach DeLoach continues to exist as well.
And
has utterly not been talked about this at all. Are we worried about the Mariners loading up on outfield prospects, and if not, why should we not worry about that?
I think Mikey should handle this. I mean, I feel like I've been talking too much.
You're the prospect guy.
Well, I mean, so from my point of view, you always just stack up on the most talent possible. Like, point blank period. And if, you know, Will Robertson is the best player that you think that you can get from the Blue Jays for Taiwan Walker, then go get him. And Zach DeLoach, if he's the highest player on your board at 43, you know, pick him. And, like, I don't think Seattle is in any sort of trouble with having, you know, Kelnick and Julio and Mitch Haniger and Fraley and, you know, Tramiel. Like, DeLoach, these guys are going to iron themselves out. And if Seattle does this the right way, and they're able to keep them at points of development where they keep their prospect value, they're going to be able to flip them for what they need later. I think it's entirely possible that Hell, I'd say it's likely that Kyle Lewis, Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez, and Taylor Trammell, those are like the four big ones right now. It wouldn't stun me at all if one of those four is not with the team on opening day 2022. Like, let it parse itself out and supplement the team with good talent.
We did get a question from Puck Nguyen at PDHNGUYEN08, and I'm so sorry if I've mispronounced that. I Googled it and tried to figure it out, but so the question was, is having four stud outfielders a potential issue? In 1 to 2 years, will all four be on the opening day roster? So it sounds like your answer is no. Mikey, what do you think?
I mean, for me, you know, Kyle Lewis has suffered devastating injuries. Kelnick and Julio, despite their pedigree, have proven nothing at the major league level. Fraley's kind of been a wash. Malik has been a wash. Not to sound like a downer, but, you know, it's just that...
Really? Because you're doing a pretty good job of it.
I mean, baseball has just... It's a fickle thing. So I think, you know, it's kind of like Joe was saying, you just continue to... Like, you can never have too much talent, and we have a lot of talent. And if you have too much, you just trade your surplus. So, I don't know. I'm actually, like, pretty... I feel like I'm pretty high on most of the guys that... that I mentioned, aside from Malik and Fraley, and I was higher on them than everyone else at one point, but now I'm not. But yeah, I would just say overall, you know, I don't think it's that crazy to say, like, most of these players haven't proven much at the MLB level, and so we need to see it shake out. Like, we still don't really know what Kyle Lewis is going to look like. It seems like he's going to be a good player. But even now, we don't even know what his contact profile and power numbers are going to look like.
And we're really not getting a full look in this season, too. So, great as he looks, we're working with a small sample size necessarily because of the season. So, we still are going to have questions about durability and questions about the contact profile and questions about the K numbers, which have been much, much, much better lately. And yeah, we're hearing all kinds of fun stuff about Jared Kelnick. I really believe in Jared Kelnick. I think he is about as solid as I could feel about a prospect is how I feel about Jared Kelnick. Like, if there is anything in our farm that is untouchable, to me, it's Kelnick. I feel certain he's going to be a big leaguer, and he's going to be really good. So, but the point remains, yeah, he's doing all this fun stuff in Tacoma, but number one, every good thing that comes out of Tacoma is also a little bit of an ouch, because you know he's doing it off of one of our pitchers. And, well, also, it's not like having the rigors of a minor league season at all.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the other day about the highlights that we see from Tacoma and the home runs that we see from Tacoma and Kelnick doing all these incredible things, but at the same time, we're not getting the views into the other... Like, yesterday, apparently, Jared Kelnick had 10 at-bats. Like, 10 at-bats. He hit a home run, but, you know, who knows what he did with the other, you know, 9 at-bats. Is he rolling over to second? Is he striking out? Like, nobody's talking about that stuff. So, I think Jared Kelnick is the safest bet to be, like, an above-average big leaguer who makes a couple of All-Star games. Like, I wholeheartedly believe in him too, but I wouldn't just assume that he's destroying every pitcher's confidence right now, because there's a lot we don't see, which is annoying, because, man, I wish minor league baseball was going on right now. It's just brutal.
It is really hard, and the idea that there might not be an Arizona Fall League or any, I mean, it's such a blow to the development of all these guys, but... Yeah, I think it's really important to recognize all we're seeing from Tacoma is highlight reels, and highlight reels don't tell you the story of a player's development, and they don't tell you the story of how a player works in that bat in, like, a clutch situation with the game on the line. You know, you have to take those things in context. So I understand being concerned about the number of outfield prospects and being like, hey, can any of these guys play infield, maybe? Seems like we're a little weak on that side. But you just, you have to see what you have first. And I think we're still a ways away from that. We did get a question from Skylar Lamb. Assuming all become starting caliber, which again is a big assumption, what is the future for Taylor Trammell, given the outfield of the future pretty well established as J-Rod, Kelnick, and Lewis?
Well,
basically, is he capped at a fourth outfielder profile?
Yeah, I think he's a fantastic fourth outfield profile. Now, do you want Taylor Trammell to be a fourth outfielder? That's kind of what you have to ask yourself. Or is he more valuable on the trade market than that? Because, you know, like, I don't think, I was talking to you guys about this last night, I don't think he's too dissimilar from Jake Fraley. He's a little bit better runner, but I mean, and he's probably a better defender in center field, but like the bat profiles really similarly. Fraley might have a better hit tool, a more proven hit tool than Taylor Trammell at this point. And I think he's kind of a similar defender to what like Braden Bishop brings to you on the field. So yeah, I think he's a really good fourth outfielder. But I think if I'm Jerry DePoto and you have these, you know, reservations of him being a fourth outfielder, I would flip him between now and next July for, you know, a starting pitcher three or like package him with someone else for Carter Kieboom out of Washington, who they've, you know, maybe been shopping around a little bit. So to answer your question, like if they're all starting caliber, I've seen too much from Lewis to designate him as a designated hitter full time. So I would move one of them for something big before they kind of exhaust their hype.
I think it's a long season, and so, you know, if you think that Taylor Trammell can play center field and you think that he can play it better than Lewis, which I would assume given his speed and his defense like scouting grades, it just sounds super ideal to like have, you know, kind of just rotate really any of these guys in at DH, or just give them a day off and have Trammell as kind of the guy that's just rotating between them.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, this isn't like, because there's a DH there, we don't have too many people here. So yeah, again, assuming everyone is starting caliber, I think he fits in fine here.
I like the idea of the fact that Trammell has basically two outcomes. Like, you can look at him and hope that power speed that a lot of scouts saw. I mean, he's a big kid. It's just the power has not shown up through his minor league career. And I have my own questions about the player development system of the Reds, which he already made a bunch of improvements when he went over to the Padres. You can see he changed his stance. He's a swing tinkerer. I think there's a really good chance that the Mariners get their hands on him development-wise and maybe do some fun things with him. And if he does, then you're in a very enviable position of, like, which of our four studs will we play? How will we get all of these stud outfielders playing time? And if not, yeah, you're looking at a fourth outfielder or maybe some trade bait for a team that has some big hitters but not maybe some athletic fast guys.
I think that, if I may do so, Kate, I think that that segues pretty well into, like, talking about how much faith we have in our player development staff.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, and that's from at Avery H. Pierce. But, so for me, in terms of on the pitching side, I think we're probably a top three, top four player development organization.
And that's not just, let's be clear, that's not just homerism. Like, Eno Saris, who is a big pitching dude from The Athletic, is a really big fan of what the Mariners are doing.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting outside accolades, and you can see, like, the Padres targeted their pitching, maybe because the Mariners have sort of a habit of taking players the Padres have discarded and cleaning them up a little.
Right, and so...
Hello, Nick Marjevicus.
It's a little different for me on the hitting side. I think we have kind of our success stories, but I guess it's just a little harder because I mean, we've had injuries, we've traded some of the players, but there are not that many successes on that side. I mean, I think I'd consider Kyle Lewis a success.
I think that's super fair. I wouldn't even credit them with Kyle Lewis, honestly. I credit Kyle Lewis right. with Kyle Lewis. True.
I think you could call Evan White. I mean, I was talking about this the other day. Like, you know, you can give the M's credit for, like, Evan White and Kyle Lewis, but they're first-rounders. Like, there's a reason they got drafted. But other than that, it's, like, Mitch Haniger and...
Noah. I would give them a lot of credit for Noah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, a lot of that stems from, we always go back to the draft. Like, this always, the Mariners don't take position players in the first 10 rounds. It's just not, you know, we were talking about it during this
they
draft,
They draft arms.
Yeah, they took, like, five infielders in the last 57 top 10 round picks. Like, they just don't take them. So, they don't have a chance to develop them. And, you know, then they go out and sign guys like Austin Nola, and they go out and find guys like Mitch Haniger. And I would say, you know, those examples are a huge indicator that they know what they're doing in that regard. Like, Mitch Haniger was not who Mitch Haniger was when they traded for him. I mean, he turned into an all-star in 2017 or 2018. I don't remember which year it was. Austin Nola, I mean, you go back and look at his minor league career. He never posted the types of lines that he did until he got here. Sam Haggerty, it's still really early, but Sam Haggerty was, I mean, he was a utility player even in the minor leagues, and he's really turned it on. Dylan Moore has really turned it on. So I think there's an ounce of the position player development going on here. Unfortunately, we just don't have very many examples of homegrown players that they've right. drafted and done it with.
Yeah, they've done a lot of maximizing guys who have been developed elsewhere, which is why I have a lot of hope for Trammell, who mm-hmm. I think will flourish under their system. He's very thoughtful. He's very cerebral. I think he'll really enjoy working with some of the hitting coaches that they have. But yeah, we have not really seen that growth from a guy that they took who wasn't Kyle Lewis.
Mm-hmm. And even on the pitching side, you know, our evidence is kind of limited just because it's not like DePoto's been here for 10 years. I mean, I think he's been here since 2015, which isn't insignificant. But the players that he's drafting are just getting a chance to come up. And that's what I said. That was basically my lead in my LJ Newsome article, is that he's really the first organically, you know, like, drafted Mariners player that's come up through the system that we've fully developed. So,
Well, I mean, Altavilla.
I more so mean in terms of, like, starters.
Yeah, in terms of starters, for sure. Because otherwise, again, like with Sheffield and Dunn, and that's a way that you accelerate a rebuild, too, is you take things mm-hmm. that other people are maybe not maximizing, and you maximize them. And that is a value source, too. That's definitely not something. But I feel like, I mean, you see the obvious ones, like Logan Gilbert, who is probably going to be really good anyway. Is he better because he's a Mariner? I think so. He's in a system that's really working for him. Is Emerson Hancock going to be really good? My guess is yes. I think George Kirby, like, they have done a good job of both maximizing their draft position and getting guys who I think are going to succeed. But you see that too in, like, guys like Ian McKinney, who was a cast off from the Cardinals organization. They really worked with him and made him into, I don't know if he's going to see the majors because of this stupid weird year, but you know, there are enough player development successes that I see at the lower levels that I feel like pretty confident in saying they know what they're doing where pitching is concerned. The bad I am more concerned with.
Yeah. I want to kind of transition on the player development for the bats here, because Austin Nola has been such a, you know, enormous success. He was a minor league signing that they turned into a huge return on investment, a huge profit. So we have a question here from one of our favorites, Mr. Joe Vieira. He is wondering who is most likely to be the next Austin Nola, basically an unheralded player who breaks out and Seattle deals for a significant return. So I do want to preface this by saying your answer definitely has to be a player that you foresee the Mariners trading, because, you know, I mean, if you see it being Tom Murphy, but Tom Murphy's going to stick around, then it can't be an answer. So who is Seattle going to move next July that they have picked up over the last year or so on the cheap?
I think this is pretty darn, you know, difficult to answer, but if I had to kind of take a swing at it, I would say someone like Andrew Moore, who is
you mean Dylan Moore. Andrew Moore is a different story.
I mean Andrew Moore. But Dylan Moore is another answer. I just think he's a little more heralded already on, like, the Twitter sphere. I don't know where Andrew Moore was, or where he's been in 2020.
I think he's with the Reds. I think Driveline.
I think he got released.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, but I think he got released.
Okay. Sad story. I don't mean Andrew Moore.
Yeah. Kudos story. To Mikey for just, like, foreseeing a prophecy.
Yeah, that's what that was. I'm just going to stick with it and go with Dylan Moore, who, I don't know, I see as kind of probably in the same vein as, like, Austin Nola, a pretty legitimate hitter, maybe playing a little bit over his head, but, like we've said a ton, he's not doing the Taylor Motter thing where he's just taking inside fastballs and sending them to his pull side. In fact, he's basically doing the opposite. So I think he could be a pretty interesting player for some teams, but there's plenty of time for him to kind of depreciate in value. I do wonder if we would have traded him if he would have stayed healthy.
I do. I think that's the big unanswered question of this trade deadline, because he is really a useful player. And I think now we have 2 years worth of data on Dylan Moore, and much like Austin Nola, I think it's become clear that it's not just a fluke. Like, this is a guy who can really hit. So Dylan Moore is also my answer, although also I don't want it to be my answer because I am irrationally attached to him. If you, as regular listeners of the podcast will know, I love him. He's so tiny. He's my tiny little wasp-waisted Disney prince.
He's like 215 pounds.
He is not. He is definitely not 215 pounds. He's like 200 pounds. And slender hit.
Does Munoz count?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I don't know if we'll be able
look
to.
Look at Joe.
I don't know.
No, I don't think so, because okay. I think he's more heralded. I think this really has to be like garbage you, like, pick up off the waiver wire. Okay, I have a different answer. Nick Margavichus.
Margavichus,
yes.
Yes.
Nicky Marge. Let's just all agree that we call him Nicky Marge.
That's a good one. Sure. Yeah. That's a really good one.
It's weird how we went from, like, waiver wire fodder from the Padres. Thank you. To, like, oh, we're putting him in graphics alongside Justin Dunn and Justin Sheffield as part of our youth movement. Okay. And I mean, that might just be a 2020 thing, but it also might be like Nicky Marge has looked legitimately good, and I'm excited for him to make a couple more starts so we can get some more data on him and see what the Mariners have him doing that he wasn't necessarily doing with the Padres.
I mean, one thing is, like, he's not Chris Paddock, and they promoted him straight from Double A. But the other thing is his fastball velocity's up 2 ticks. I would love to get something for him, because I for someone who doesn't have what I would call, like, necessarily a good fastball, although we were talking about the other night how his CSW, called strikes plus whiffs, is like 32% on his fastball, which is quite good. But he doesn't have much else to speak of, at least in my opinion. So it would be cool to be able to profit off of Mark Avich's.
I mean, he's got a curveball.
He's got a curveball. This is correct.
I mean, I think that he is one of those, like, more than the sum of his parts kind of thing in the way that he mixes his pitches and locates. But
yeah,
I got one for you guys that I think is going to be a very likely flip next July, and that's Johan Ramirez. I mean, he was a Rule 5 guy.
No, not Pogolhan.
If they fix him, though, and Seattle's not competing next, I mean, relievers always fetch way more than they have any business fetching. And if you got a guy that's throwing like 97 to 100 with a wipeout slider and he actually knows where it's going from that horizontal angle, there's going to be people like prying at Jerry DePoto trying to get him out of Seattle. So,
yeah, you're right.
It would require Seattle getting off to a really poor start next year. But I think that's certainly possible.
Definitely within the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that I had such a visceral no reaction to that is it's really fun. If you're looking for reasons to watch the 2020 Mariners, which admittedly there are not a ton, especially now, Johan Ramirez is definitely one of them because you are literally watching a pitcher come into himself. It matters so much to him. The Mariners could be losing in like a football game score blowout like they were the other night. And he is just coming out. He wants to prove himself. You know, I think all guys who get Rule 5 when their organization doesn't choose to protect them, that's a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I just feel like he pitches with emotion. He's really fun to watch. He's not always accurate, but he is so enthusiastic. And I love his spirit. And he's definitely one of my very big fun points of 2020.
I think Matthew said he looks like a pitcher pitching on caps lock or something like that.
Yes, yeah, he did. Yes.
That was the comment of the year.
Yeah, it's pretty good, Matthew.
Well, let's jump into another question here. This is from our very own Anders Jorstad, Durs, as we like to call him. Do we believe in the Jose Marmolejos surge? And before you answer yes, Abba, I'll add a second part to that. Let's define what his surge is before kind of answering it.
I mean, the surge is like he hit, what, 3 or 4 home runs in the past 4 games or whatever?
I guess the question might be, Marmolejos has always just been like a 50 bat, 50 power guy. And that's like, those are his carrying tools. Like, it's bat over everything. And I think we kind of talked about that in the preseason. Like, hey, he's a great backup plan if Daniel Vogelbach doesn't hit, which turned out to be the case. So, Kate, do you believe in the bat? Do you believe that Marmolejos could be a good bat first, bench bat kind of thing?
I'm very biased because my introduction to Marmolejos was when I was following the LIDOM, the Dominican Winter Baseball League, this past winter. And Manny Acta acquired, as part of the Aguilas, acquired Marmolejos, and the fans, who are extremely passionate, I definitely recommend everyone get into LIDOM baseball if you're a big passionate baseball fan, because they are so fun, like so fun to interact with and just read what they're saying. It's a double-edged sword, certainly, because when your player does not do well, the things that are said are harsh. And they had some harsh things to say about Marmolejos, but he did not do well for them. And the fans just hated him and were like, what does Manny Acta see in him? Blah, blah, blah. So I think Manny Acta was huge in getting Marmolejos to the Mariners. So it's been hard for me to separate that to some extent. I'm like, what is he doing here? You know, obviously, Manny believes in him and argued for him. I see a guy who is a great spirit, and I love him as a person. Super supportive teammate. I think there's a lot of I think there's more power in the bat than has maybe been shown, but the plate discipline is rough. I would love to see them really work with him and for him to kind of turn it around and become maybe part of that question that we got about Austin Nola, the next Austin Nola. But I have a lot of doubts. I think Jose Marmolejos is your 2020, like, will be a Sporkle answer at some point. Maybe sort of like Deho Lee, like, you remember him fondly because he comes up with some huge clutch hits. But, like, ultimately, I don't see the same breakout coming for him as some of our other guys.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite preseason, more so like spring kind of guys. I thought it was pretty fun that, you know, he was looking pretty good. But obviously, like, the bat's going to have to play because we have Evan White up first. And apparently Ty France, you know, can probably play some first too. But yeah, if you think of, like, launch angle tightness, like, he hits a lot of pop-ups. He hits a lot of ground balls spiked into the ground. And he does make good contact. But I think this kind of run in the past week or so is more so just all of those hard hit balls coming at once and inflating the very few batted ball events that he has. Like Kate said, the plate discipline, not great. I think he's kind of looking, in terms of plate discipline, like the player that we sort of thought Kyle Lewis could have been this year if he, you know, didn't tighten things up. So
oof, that's rough, but that's true.
Yeah. So I love him. I really, like, it makes me happy to see him shine, but I think it's a little bit of a flash in the pan.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Just, I mean, he's got a couple of things going for him. For one, he's not young by any means. Like, he's been through the ringer. He's 27 years old. He's going to be 28 this year before the end of the year. And last year at AAA for Washington at Fresno, he hit 315, 366, 545 with 18 home runs. So, I mean, like, he kind of burst onto the scene last year, or, you know, maybe he made it click, maybe he figured it out. I haven't given up on the idea that he's a good, you know, 26th man, bat first type of profile, but yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. I don't know if he necessarily has a roster spot on a championship team.
Yeah.
So
I would like to cover this question.
Yeah.
This is, I have no way to make a transition here. I just want to cover it because I love the way that it was asked from Nick Fielden at Nickel Fielden. Is Tom Murphy actually injured, or is he just hiding from Trader Jerry in the medical facility? Also, with the acquisition of Luis Torrens, who starts behind the plate for us in 2022, not 2021.
Ooh.
And not even the remainder of 2020, which DePoto said today, it looks like Torrens is going to be the one back there, which I was concerned by because this is a guy who had some pretty strong numbers in the Padres minor league system, and then they skipped him from AA right up to the majors, I guess, because they needed him.
And he's only 23. He's still young.
He is, which is an interesting thing with a lot of the Padres prospects, because they don't always have space to move them up. I've noticed not all of them, excepting the Latin guys who are obviously always kind of young for the level. They have a lot of guys who are old for the level, especially their college players.
We're going to run into some really, really funky 40-man decisions over the next calendar year with all of these prospects coming up. Like, there's going to be some weird trades, some weird DFAs.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a giant roster crunch right now, and teams don't have the precedent to be able to cover this many people. So Torrens is a good example, but last year Tampa Bay didn't have room for Jake Cronenworth, who now is probably going to win NL Rookie of the Year.
Right. Crazy.
For the Padres, right? And there's like a few of these every single year. So I'm really excited to kind of see what happens with that, especially here at the end of the year when Rule 5 designations take place, because it's going to be like Lucius Fox. Lucius Fox is another one. He was a former top 100 prospect for the Rays, and they just shipped him out to where did he go? Kansas City for, I don't remember. It was for the outfielder, Brett Phillips. So, like, teams are going through roster crunches right now and moving their prospects for weird returns. So you might see some really interesting names come to Seattle here in November. I just think that's worth noting.
Yeah, it's a good time to have a lot of roster flexibility. And honestly, a lot of these Padres players who came, like Taylor Trammell, is Rule 5 eligible this December. So pretty much all the guys that San Diego is facing a huge roster crunch. So part of their, you know, people are saying, oh, the Padres got fleeced in these trades. No, the Padres are trying to maximize what they can get before they potentially have to lose these guys for basically nothing in the Rule 5. So,
yeah.
And we'll see even more of that coming
in regards, in regards to the Tom Murphy question, I think getting hurt, Tom Murphy was, for Tom Murphy's sake, he really needed to stay healthy this year, because I don't know if you could point to a bigger candidate in the league as a regression candidate. I mean, Tom Murphy had never performed at the big league level. Granted, he only had like a couple of years, you know, kind of dipping his toes in with Colorado. And I think he played in spring training for San Francisco before getting moved over here. But he burst onto the scene out of nowhere. And he was one of the better catchers, frankly, in the league last year when it comes to offensive war. So he really needed to stay healthy this year, and I think the team is obviously going to give him another opportunity in 2021 to prove that, you know, to prove that he's not the guy that we think he might be. Now, I'll say this, just because I think it's an interesting question. There are people out there, including myself, who think JT Realmuto would have been an interesting acquisition for Seattle this offseason if they were to spend money, because really young staff, premier catcher, can call a good game. With Tom Murphy getting hurt, I don't think the Mariners can chase after a free agent like that, because they don't know what they have in Murphy. And if they tried to flip Murphy after signing Realmuto, I think you'd get pennies on the dollar. So just an interesting dynamic. So I think you expect Tom Murphy to be back next year, and Torrens will be the defensive replacement, the 2 days a week type of guy. But getting Torrens really allows you the development cycle for Cal Raleigh. And I can't say from a louder station how important it is to not rush Cal Raleigh to the big leagues.
Yeah, I think, if I, you know, gun to my head, if I had to guess who our catcher was in 2022, I would say it's Cal Raleigh or a catcher not currently in the organization. I think, you know, I was just talking about how I don't think Jose Marmolejos is necessarily a good hitter. I think on the whole, Tom Murphy's a pretty similar hitter to him in terms of, I mean, really just across the board, he just has, he's a little better in terms of contact, a little better in terms of optimizing, you know, where he's hitting the ball and everything. You know, he's a good receiver. He is obviously a really intense player and a good leader, but I think you could say sort of the same thing about Cal Raleigh. So yeah, in the organization, I would say it's Raleigh, and then maybe Murphy, but I think there's a decent chance that we don't currently have that catcher.
Yeah, it makes me really nervous that Raleigh has a handful of bats at AA, and that is it. So again, we're seeing his highlight reel from Tacoma, and it's very easy to paint a picture that everything's going great, but we don't see him struggle. We don't see him strike out. We don't see him kind of facing. I really wanted to see him in AA this year and see how he would do. I got a scouting report from an opposing player that he said, oh, Raleigh, you know, Raleigh can really hit. He knows what he's doing up there. He has a plan. He just was getting overwhelmed by, which, it, you know, to be fair, the jump from AA to, from high A to AA is a really hard one. So Raleigh did not show great at that. And I am willing to extend him all the kind of, give him a very long leash,
yes.
But he is about as far from a sure thing even though he's a college bat and has hit, he's a switch hitter, which makes me nervous because I'm prejudiced against switch hitters. It's not fair. I just am. I'll admit that.
Well, switch hitting paired with, you know, being a catcher.
Yes. That I just feel like that's a lot of moving pieces. Like, that's a lot to develop. And
yeah,
I think oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, just that he's very, I don't think he's far away developmentally, but I think, like, it's a riskier profile than, say, Jared Kelnick, if Jared Kelnick were the equivalent of Jared Kelnick, if Joey Bart was their catcher, I'd be, like, totally fine, not worried about it. But
so let me ask you this, Kate. On Raleigh, what do you expect his typical line to be?
I don't know. I mean, it's such a cop out, but I don't even feel like I know what his identity as a hitter is yet, because he was so dominant in the Cal League. Like, I think they were slow in moving him up, honestly. He was so dominant at that level that it was hard to see, like, it was hard to see him struggle because he just didn't struggle. So I don't know how he is, in the same way that I watched Kelnick struggle at A level because he wasn't getting pitches in the zone. I watched Kelnick struggle at high A because he was all of a sudden dealing with quality breaking stuff. Raleigh didn't have any of those problems.
So let me opine something. We all remember how he just crushed Modesto. But,
yes.
I mean, that was the best. If you eliminate Everett, which I largely eliminate Everett from everybody's career slash line, because especially as a college draftee, it's a joke. Modesto was his best batting line ever, and he was a highlight reel, and he still only hit .261. And he had a .336 on base, which was fine, but even that was a career high. Slugging was .535, which is healthy at any level. So for me, when I think of Cal Raleigh, I kind of think of a guy that is a .240 hitter.
Yep.
Who probably hits like 22 to 25 home runs just because of the loft and natural power that he has in his swing. But that's so. Assuming he's a .240 hitter with 22 home run power, is he a good enough catcher to play the position full time with that bat?
Yes, I think I'm not worried about his catching abilities at all. I think he's a very good cerebral, natural catcher who has been discounted a lot because of his size, but is way more like laterally mobile than a lot of people would think he is. Way looser in the hips than you would expect looking at him physically, because he is a chunkster.
Yeah. And I think he can call a game. Like, I think the kid can call a game. He's a great leader. That's very clear. But I just wonder if he has the arm. I mean, he showed strides in Modesto. He got to Arkansas. He was exposed in Arkansas for his throwing arm. And so I just wonder.
He had one of the best throwing arms in Modesto. Like, he had one of the highest caught he had a higher caught stealing rate than Joey Bart in Modesto.
Yeah.
I'm not super worried about the arm. I think it's very accurate. Is it like the strongest? Is it a cannon? I don't think it's a cannon, but I think it's very accurate. So
yeah.
I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about it. He's a very good blocker. I'm not worried about any of those things. Chiefly, I'm worried about the pressure being placed on him in 2022 to be like, you're our everyday catcher.
He'll be 24 next year. He'll be 25 next October.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's got to happen.
It's got to happen in 2022. And frankly, being a 2018 draft pick, he's Rule 5 eligible after the 2021 season. So, like, I don't know. It's interesting. I think what this conversation is really showing us is the situation at catcher for the Mariners is not figured out. Like, we do not for sure have the catcher of the future in the organization. And that's something that we've talked about during draft podcasts, during trade deadlines before, during free agent periods. The Mariners have to go target catchers for this organization, because, and that's why Reese McGuire came up so much in the Taiwan Walker trade type ideas.
No, thank you.
Even though he's local boy. Poor Reese. But anyways, Carter Bins, you know, maybe it happens. Jake Anchia, probably a little bit lesser chance that it happens. The team needs to go fill out their minor league system with some catchers. I think that's clear.
Please draft Ian Muller. Please Mikey. Draft Ian Muller.
I'm still thinking about Reese McGuire.
All right.
I thought of a Photoshop that I'm going to do.
I don't want to know. Good God, I have absolutely no interest in whatever Wolverine meme Photoshop you have.
One final question. I broke these up into pitching cues. Sorry that we didn't talk about Justin Dunn. We will do that on a feature pod. General organizational cues. This is filed under thirst cues. The question from Brittany Bush is, how did Kyle Seager get so hot, and how much will it break my heart to get attached to him now? Realistically, this is a question about a Kyle Seager trade possibility, but I would like to stop and pour one out for Kyle Seager's quarantine scruff, which was very attractive, and apparently had to shave because his children didn't like it.
What?
Yeah. And also, Austin Nola also had a quarantine scruff. Very attractive looking. Austin Nola looked like a rogue pirate.
Those look like rebuild beards to me.
No, he looked good. Austin Nola, I enjoyed looking at his face, and I'm sorry that I don't get to look at it anymore.
Really? He's... whatever.
No, he was good looking. I mean, I have Kyle Lewis to look at.
Are we talking about Kyle? Is that what's happening?
We're talking about Kyle Seager. Kyle Seager. So, Kyle Seager trade. Is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? Will it happen?
Nope. And I'll do you one better. I think the Mariners are going to exercise his 2022 option.
Wow.
Like, without even him being traded. I think Seattle's going to keep him around for one more year for 15 mil.
I agree.
It's not that bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have, at this point, you know, one war, and obviously in terms of how much war is worth, it's non-linear, but that's like one and a half war.
Yeah.
I think just being a vet, might be worth that much.
If your plan is to go out and get yourself a Chris Bryant, so when do teams have to decide on that option? Is it the last day of the season, or is it the season before?
I think it's the last day of the season.
Okay. I think so.
I can't imagine. Yeah.
So that would be a pretty risky bet. But, I mean, if you want to go get Chris Bryant, he's available after next year. Otherwise, I'd just bring back Kyle Seager for another. He only has to be a two-war guy at the age of, how old will he be? 34? 35?
He's 32 now?
Yeah, 34, 35.
And he's leaning into, you know, kind of what I think is a good approach to kind of avoid aging. If he's going to struggle with maybe declining bat speed and he's already kind of, he doesn't have that much power. Like, he's just good at optimizing, you know, sending balls to his pull side. And he's kind of changed ever since I wrote that article. He's kind of reverted a little bit back into who he was, but his ground ball rates and contact have remained. So I think that's encouraging.
And his defense isn't deteriorating.
No. And now he's got Evan White. So, I mean, he just has to pitch it in the general direction.
Okay, I have a request.
Yes.
So one, I feel like the people want to hear about Mitch Haniger.
Oh, yeah. We should probably address that guy.
That is true. I meant to get to that in the outfield, and then you had such a nice segue that I backed down on that. So. Just
my other thing is I wanted to hear Joe's thoughts. I just said Joe on my LJ Newsom comps.
Okay. Oh. All right. Let's wrap up with this then. Mitch Haniger exists.
He does.
Need to remind everybody about that. Mitch Haniger. I feel like it is. People ask me. People love to ask me about Mitch Haniger. They love to at the account and ask about Mitch Haniger, and I always reply with the gif of that little girl with the blonde pigtails going.
Wait, the cotton candy girl?
No. Cotton candy girl is excited. This girl is bemused, confused, unsure.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea. Like, I don't know where he is health-wise. Like,
you guys, I talk to people in the organization constantly, and they don't know where he is.
Oh, my God.
And I don't mean that as a slight to Mitch. Like, it's just, he's just rehabbing. Like, he's not with the team. He doesn't travel with the team. It certainly doesn't sound like he works out with the team, but he hangs out with the team off the field, and he's just rehabbing on his own. But as far as like team activities go and things like that, like he's not involved. He's nowhere close to coming back this year, at least not from my perception.
Like, is Mitch Haniger haunted? I think Mitch Haniger might be haunted.
He might be. So I think at the very least, if he is anywhere near healthy, just because of no one talks about hitting the way that Mitch Haniger does.
Yes.
So I think just his presence as a obviously very, very forward thinking, progressive, analytical hitter, like no one talks about, you know, like spin coming off the bat or like, you know, some of these things players talk about. But I think he's just a good player to have around. And if he doesn't continue his playing career because of whatever nagging issues, I think we should bring him on as like a coach.
He'd be a good coach. That's a good call.
I think so too. Yeah.
And he's not just like all about the hitting side. He's huge into that mental side too. So mm-hmm. he could add a lot. And I'm sad that the young hitters aren't getting to talk to him. And I hope he starts showing up at like, I don't know, do they have like potlucks? Go to the potluck, Mitch. Mitch would definitely bring
to be
something
a fly
vulgar,
on the wall.
Vulgar based. It would definitely be like a vulgar salad. That's what
I was actually thinking, like a potato salad with like raisins.
No, he's white. He's not that white.
Jeez, I resent both of you.
Mishevitz would do that.
Wait. Why, Joe? Do you put raisins in your?
No, but I certainly don't want to be cast as the type of person who does.
I'm going to tweet after this set that Joe puts raisins.
Oh, okay. Nope. Shutting this down.
This is
the
absolute
vulgar joke.
Weirdest bit of appropriation I've ever been a part of.
Okay, so Mitch Haniger, we don't know what's up. Sorry, we do not. We got a bunch of questions about him actually, and I'm sorry, we have no good answers for you. We wish Mitch the best. What was the other part of your question, Mikey?
I want to say one thing on Mitch. Like, I don't know. He's only making $1.1 million this year, which means he's going to be due because he didn't play.
Yeah.
Unless he fights for a bigger arbitrary number, which I think's pretty stupid. He's going to get a 10% increase, which is so he'll make $1.25 next year. You got to extend him a contract, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I think so.
So I don't think he'll be non-tendered or released, but like you're not going to go out and get a good reliever for $1.25 million. I'd just rather have Haniger around. It'd be really fun. Like it'd be a pretty cool lineup on May 1st if this team all of a sudden has Kyle Seager and Mitch Haniger and Jared Kelnick, and Evan White and Kyle Lewis and J.P. Crawford. Like I don't – like people – maybe don't realize that we might be like 9 months away from a really, really fun, fun lineup. So long as, you know, Kelnick is up at that point. So,
right.
I hope he stays healthy. I just want to see the guy get another chance.
I will say that the Mariners, they did Marco a solid, and obviously that had more legal ramifications, but they did kind of extend him some basically cash for what the Cardinals did. I don't remember exactly what
they tried to screw him out of a year of arbitration slash free agency.
So maybe, yeah. Hopefully.
You kind of feel feel bad for Haniger because I'm sure there was a point, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years where an extension was on the table and,
right,
you know, it didn't come to fruition. But that's why I want to see the guy get, you know, get his feet back under him, because he's a year away from being a free agent, and you'd hate to see him not play going into that.
Absolutely. So, Mikey, the other part of your question?
Yeah, it was about LJ Newsome.
Yes.
So basically, Joe, I don't know if you got a chance to read it, but I kind of had a soft comp for him. And I was talking about it in the Slack last night, and one of them was Andrew Heaney. I think the difference between Newsome and Andrew Heaney is Heaney has more of like a sinkerish tilt to his fastball, and also spins it really well. And Newsome spins his kind of well, but not as well. But regardless, in terms of fastball ride, they're pretty similar. They're out of the same arm slot, same repertoire. Also kind of figured that he doesn't look dissimilar from Aaron Nola outside of kind of optimization things in terms of pitch location, pitch usage, because he throws his fastball a lot more than Nola does.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to kind of hear your thoughts on that.
I did see the Andrew Heaney comparison last night, and I checked that out a little bit. I apologize, I didn't see the Aaron Nola piece. I would be like, for me, I think the way my mind works, we're at a point now where pitching is largely, I think pitches are, their success rates are predicated on like extension and the way they work in the zone. And I think Andrew Heaney, yeah, he's more of like a sinker cutter guy. Whereas LJ Newsome is more of a kind of ride and high guy. It's a lot of backspin and he gets the ball up in the zone. But that being said, I did look a little bit further into the profiles, and it looks like they have a pretty similar release point, albeit switched, like an inverse lefty and a righty.
Right.
And they both have similar extension. And I don't know, I don't have it in front of me, but the thing that makes LJ's fastball work so well is the fact that he's only 5'11 and he gets down the mound, which is incredible for someone that, how do you say this respectfully? He doesn't look like an athlete. He doesn't look like an athlete. It's what makes Trevor Bauer, well, I can say the same about Trevor Bauer. It's what makes him so good. The extension, the ball is damn near traveling up out of his hand through the zone. So, and that's what works for LJ. I think the sink or the changeups are pretty similar, albeit Haney's is a lot better, but they have some of the same characteristics. So
it's really interesting, because despite the fact that LJ throws his pretty hard at times, he gets quite a bit of drop on it.
Yeah.
And I'm not totally certain how he does it, but I was pretty surprised to find last night that he gets a little bit more extension than Heaney does, and Heaney's like 3 inches taller. Overall, I just think they, across the board, have really similar, I don't even know, like, I think you could call LJ's a slider or a curveball, but they have pretty similar just repertoires, pitch characteristics, and like you said, Heaney's fastball is really weird, but he does throw it at the top of the zone, because it's kind of, I think it might have been mischaracterized
Me
as
too.
A sinker, even though it's a fastball.
Yeah, Haney's pitch profile, the data on it is, he's got the sinker, which, I mean, it is a sinker, like it's got a good amount of sink, but his four-seamer is essentially a cutter that tails away from batters. So, I mean, people probably get those misconstrued, like when we're watching them on TV. The only thing about, the thing with LJ is if the like changeup is going to be a real part of his repertoire long term, and I know we're going a little bit long here, Kate, if the changeup is going to be a piece that works for him, he's just going to have to get more drop on it, because he throws it pretty firm right now, and it doesn't tumble into a right-handed batter's ankles. It just, all it really is, his changeup, all it really is a separation pitch right now. So if he can maybe adjust his grip a little bit, the arm action is fine on it. If he can adjust his grip a little bit and just get a little bit more vertical drop or a little bit of tumble and fade on that pitch, it's going to be a real offering. But like right now, even though it's getting a lot of ground balls, it's nothing more than a 40 offering. And, you know, once people kind of adjust to his approach, it'll kind of get washed out of his arsenal, if you ask me.
Which is why I'm surprised that, you know, like Fangraphs has it as a 55-60 changeup right now. And in my opinion, his, you know, his curveball slider looks like a better pitch.
Yeah, me too. I think he's a fastball slider guy right now, personally. And he's going to live and die by his fastball command, so long as he spots it at the top of the zone. So,
agreed.
What McLean used to call the goat ball. The nickname, the goat ball.
Exactly.
Which I've expected to see him throw a lot more, but he really does seem to be using those secondaries a lot. So,
yeah. Oh, you know
I don't
what?
Know. LJ is another more than the sum of his parts player, I think. So pitch sequencing and mixing is going to be really important.
We should probably mention, just because we never brought him up, and I know it's the very end of the podcast, but Taylor Williams was also flipped, speaking of LJ Newsome, for Matt Brash today. And
yes, we do need to talk about Matt Brash.
Just really briefly, I know we're going kind of long, but speaking of LJ Newsome, like the Mariners, and I wrote about this, so you might kind of already know this if you're listening and you've already read it, but the Mariners have a type. They have a type of pitcher that they want, and it's these guys that get down the mound and they have a low release slot, which lets these fastballs work, and it's exactly why LJ Newsome works. So Matt Brash is 6'1", he's 180. He's got a fastball that is better than LJ's in terms of the amount of ride that it gets up in the zone, and it's 92 to 94. And then he's got a changeup that's better than LJ's as well. Definitely a 55 offering with a ton of fall off the table. And it definitely tumbles into the batter's box for a right-hander. So good, really good, honestly, fastball changeup guy. And then he's also got a curveball that's a little bit loopy and slurvy when he leaves it up, and a slider that is, it doesn't really have any gyro spin. It's more of a cutter. It's a soft cutter right now. So I know, Kate, you kind of think he's a reliever. I think that's very possible if the violent delivery ends up, you know, costing him longevity.
Yeah, I just think he's a big dude. But he already throws mid-90s. He could probably be coached to throw more. Maybe he's a long reliever since he does have the pitch mix, but
he does,
you know,
have
they'll
some
probably
funk.
Just let him get in there and see what he can do. But I don't think they make huge wholesale changes. They more like make tweaks. So I think if they let him keep his violent delivery, then I see a bullpen piece there.
I would just say, I mean, it might ultimately be a bullpen piece, but I think Jerry would be silly to move Taylor Williams, who has, I mean, 5 years of control. I mean, he's got a ton of control ahead of him for what is essentially the same player. Like, I mean, different arsenal, but the same outcome type of a reliever. I don't know. It would be an interesting relief profile just because he has like that three quarters short arm action to the plate, like that Max Scherzer kind of
I was just going to say, put. And he's got the same kind of faults in terms of like the because people were worried about the head whack and the violent delivery with Scherzer coming up, if I recall correctly. And then he's also, you know, like he's got the same or like similar approach angle and sort of repertoire. I mean, not necessarily the slurve or anything, but I had a question because I was reading your article earlier, and you said that right now he probably slots in like 28th to 30th.
Yeah.
Is it just proximity that keeps him from ranking any higher?
Yeah, I think it's that and the volatility of the profile. Like, if he's not a starting pitcher, I only have him there because I have him as a starting pitcher. I would rank him right below Jonathan Clase on my rankings, above Donnie Walton and above Anthony Misevich. But if he's a reliever, like, you know, he's probably 35 to 45. So,
okay. Yeah.
But
I do think this is the exact kind of guy that we need to be getting for like relievers and everything. So I was a big fan of
this. Yeah, there is that. I mean, we definitely didn't talk about the fact that are we even going to have room for this guy in the rotation in 2024? So maybe he does end up becoming a really big arm. Like Juan Ten is a great example. We've got him. He's a quote unquote starting pitcher.
Yeah, but Fangraphs is already calling him a reliever.
Yeah. Oh, the new guy?
No, Juan Ten.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think he could be a good starting pitcher, but I think as a reliever, you know, if he was 97 to 99 at Gas Camp, he's not going to hold that.
It's just always a good idea to remember that, like, very few guys survive the trip up the minor leagues
exactly
as a starter. Most of them are headed to the bullpen. So.
Well, and, like, if you have this guy clocked at 97 to 99 with a banger curveball at Gas Camp, he's definitely not 97 to 99 over 80 pitches. So,
well, and the question is, what do you get more value out of? Do you get more value out of slow playing him and trying to develop that, or is your window, which is what they did with Edwin Diaz and what they did kind of with Dan Altavilla, who both started as starters, is your window something where you want to get that guy up to the majors to start helping out the big club as quickly as possible? So
yeah, I mean, there's a reason 110 is on the 60. I'm just gonna say that, like, he's not that far away from contributing.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that's all I got on Matt Brash.
Yeah, well, thank you for running that down. And again, sorry we went a little long. Thank you for those of you who stuck with us this far. It's been kind of a busy series of events the last couple of days. And also, it looks like there are not going to be games tomorrow. Well, today, this is coming out on Tuesday or Wednesday, because the Athletics had a positive COVID-19 test in their organization. They seem to have tested negative, but you know, with the waiting period and all that.
Bob Nightingale said they all tested negative. So.
Yeah, we cannot trust.
Prayers to Oakland.
Means, you know, they're all probably
dead.
No, I was not going to say that, but I was trying to find something nicer to say. I did not. You should not joke around about COVID-19. It is very upsetting to, like, be going along with the season and have normal, even though they're, you know, time-shortened things like this weird trade deadline, and then all of a sudden you're reminded that there is a looming global pandemic which affects us all. So really, really tough times. Hopefully you enjoyed this hour 20 hour and a half escape from all of that with us. And you know, the Mariners are, the 2020 Mariners are not better, but the 2021, 22, 23 Mariners hopefully are. So we'll keep updating you on all the changes that keep coming down the pike, and look forward to when we actually have full minor league seasons and we can really see these guys. So until then, thank you so much for listening. I'm Kate. You can find me at Kate Prusser, or I run the at Lookout Landing Twitter account. Joe is at Joe Doyle, DOYLEMILB. And Mikey, I cannot remember your bullshit, Mikey.
No,
I'm
one,
sorry.
No one ever can.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's Disthy Mikey. It's DYSTHYMIKEY.
Yeah, I can't spell
it. I need to change it.
Change
this happens
it. It's
every
so
single...
bad, Mikey. It's so bad. Be Michael Ajeto or
someone
Ajeto,
buy this man a tombstone.
Be I love Taro, Mikey. Be anything. Just don't be what you are now.
I love Taro.
I don't. You like the
you,
cheesecake?
You
the Taro ube? I'm sorry, ube.
Wow.
Oh.
How dare you mix up your roots? Fuck. All right.
These are so random.
Is racist.
Be the last Ajeto bender.
Yeah, you're always going on about the ube cheesecake. Shout out to Hood Famous, which I have not been to, but Mikey's always talking about.
It's amazing.
Listeners have turned this shit off.
So in the meantime, go get some Hood Famous cheesecake, listen to the pod, read our articles, and we will talk to you all later. Bye! 'Cause I can't stop loving you. No, I can't.